Mirror number one. Has been instilled in me from a very young age with choral singing, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it is a thing. There is a video from the mid-90s of a concert in which the choir I was in and that my mother directed performs Benjamin Britten's A Ceremony of Carols, and I have one of the solo parts, and although I have no memory of actually doing it, I just remember the harp being mesmerized by it. I was like 7 or 8. The only way I can describe my voice in the video is all out and strong, like a ray of light traveling all around me, clear as day. I was doing it, and I was too young to assess the doing. As far as I can remember, my understanding of voices is that voices are either ugly or beautiful. Fast forward 12 years, I'm now a jazz vocalist. I still sing sacred music sometimes, and I'm still unsure on what my place as a performer is exactly. What am I about? And I'll have to wait a couple of more years to find myself on a stage and realize that, shoot, I should have gone to drama school. But that's another story. I'm also writing, and that gives me some degree of authority, some outlet, something to make sense of my strangeness, of the monsters in my brain, because I have depression. By all accounts, I am the difficult one, according to everybody. I am a troubled young woman, a good candidate for an artist, surely somebody who can't just enjoy. So when I'm at the Umbra Jazz Festival and I begin to sing, "Stars shining bright above you," and the wonderful Donna McElroy from Berklee College of Music in Boston, who selected me as a soloist for the showcase, says, "You sound great and you look great," I somehow take umbrage. I feel like a pretty doll when I'm on stage that way, and I don't like to feel pretty that way. Then I'm singing jazz, I'm like 19 or 20, and I have a showcase at the music school in Rome where I'm studying jazz and free improvisation. And I have to do bossa nova, which is not my cup of tea at all. But I work hard and I do it well. And afterwards, my singing teacher tells my mom that I was great on stage, and my mom says, "Yes," and then she adds quickly, "If only she could also play an instrument." I'm not telling you this to depict my mom as a bad parent. She's not, and she's quite literally the person who introduced me to voice work. Going to workshops, coming back and telling me the strange things about voices, breathing, and introducing a beautiful notion of a thread holding you up like a link between your body and the sky. But my mother is a classical musician. She is strict. She doesn't understand how I can adore the voice of Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins or Susie from Susie and the Banshees, let alone 1970s punk. And Billie Holiday is great, granted, but her vibrato is excessive, just like yours, she tells me. Mirror number two. So I just finished the voice course at Central School of Speech and Drama, and on week one we did a thing called voice speed dates, where we had a chat with each other and we gave each other vocal feedback, just to try and describe what we heard. And I compared that feedback from my voice peers to what I got from the participants of an online voiceover course that I took over the summer, just before the course. The voiceover people say things like sultry, silky and soothing, direct, confident commercials, cool and quirky 20s, 30s, chocolate ads, food ads, perfumes, quirky, sassy, European. And my voice peers say things like welcoming, accent light to medium, clear chest, lots of lips, smooth, rich, sultry, feels present. Smooth, rich, sultry, a part of me is pleased and reassured. I still got beautiful, I'm not condemned to ugly. On one of our first voice classes, we draw our voice as it is now, and then our voice as we want it to be. I'm terrible at drawing, but for the first drawing, for my voice as it is now, I draw a vase with blooming flora coming out of it, which is like all beautiful and long roots, blue and purple and long roots. And the second drawing is a similar vase, but the stuff that comes out of it is less pretty. It looks like algae. It looks more durable and alive, as if it could flex and ooze stuff and morph into something less pretty, but perhaps more expressive.
Please laugh, most likely to the right there, lawyer. It's the director in me. Take a step back. Ah, no, come back towards me. Much better. Stay there, petal, will you? Your accent is still strong. Do you speak your first language often? Do you have people you talk to in Italy? Are you on the phone with them much? The second time was less strong. Did you hear that? You still have an accent, but it was clearer. But now you're using your writer's mind instead of savoring the sensuality of your words in your own accent. With that face, own it, and then you will be this gorgeous new self.
Right, so that is something that an actual voice tutor told me not long ago. So think about pedagogy and bad pedagogy. Having an accent. So I've been struggling with this thing, this impossible desire to be native or become native, which is impossible. But a couple of weeks ago, I'm having a chat with a guy who's an actor and an actor trainer, and he refers to English, for me, as an additional language. And I really want to hug him, because usually people say English is a foreign language. And I want to say, yes, no, it's additional. It's not foreign, because it's mine. It's not foreign. Sorry, I get emotional. Even though it isn't the first language I learned chronologically, but it is mine. It's the language of my writing and of love and sex and fun. And late at night, I analyzed this over and over with my Irish boyfriend, who's in the room, who always asks, why would you want to sound English anyways? Mirror number three. I have tried to understand how these two things, beautiful and ugly, operate in relation to what I'm really interested in, which is expressivity, making good work, and liveness. The artists that I admire the most are really not preoccupied with fulfilling a certain aesthetic ideal. If anything, they are preoccupied with the opposite. They, in a way, reject the idea of craft, a technical accomplishment. There seems to be a sort of an implied divide. Technically accomplished performers who can be directed, be versatile, make money, but that sometimes are a bit boring. And then work that is sexy, funny, furious, and free, allegedly because of its anti-professional stance. And once again, I don't quite fit anywhere. I want both cakes and to eat them. So if technical accomplishment is laden with stifling aesthetic categories, it's the realm of the enforced beautiful, together with the insufferable and frankly rotten hierarchy of what is canonical and what isn't, who gets to speak and why. And if political and expressive freedom is linked to obstinate anti-craft, so I'm going to be a bit controversial now, but you have an entire generation of poets who regularly perform their work on stage, but have never given any thought about their voice, how they use it, because they're not actors, and that's boring and silly. So this might be simplistic, but maybe it's a bit true, and in any case, it's true for me. So where do I go from here? In October, during my course, we have our very first vocal anatomy class. And in my notes, I write, all knowledge hangs on a skeletal system, this genetic endowment we share as humans. How do we work with what we are given as people, as bodies? How do we put the parts back together? How do we manage the weight of the skull, the sliding of the vertebrae? How do we find balance? During that session, we proceeded to think about balance and about the feet, and I walked thinking of being simply a skeleton. No flesh, miraculously defying gravity. That was the first time that something happened. That concepts that weren't completely new to me about the embodied voice or simply about having a body were presented in a way that somehow just clicked in my head. So when we did a thing called we broke down and rebuilt our spine, doing like curls up, curl down and curl up, and I had a classmate buzzing sound into each one of my vertebrae, I highly recommend that. Or during Alexander Technique classes, I highly recommend Alexander Technique as well. I realized that I could weigh these concepts and these feelings against a lifetime of being on stage and off stage without a strong, a deep bodily awareness. I was making sound, I was breathing the right way, but I wasn't really connected, and I had no clue about my feet touching the floor or about the four curves of the spine, about my pelvis. And I was making sound only from the throat, from the larynx up. So the rest of my body, whatever, was there, wasn't there. And my notes from this period of discovery are literally just a bunch of caps lock enthusiastic statements like, I feel I have discovered my spine. Or, today I learned how to sit down and how to walk. Or, a floating skull. The level of my gaze changed, the way I walked, stood, and moved changed. It sounds so silly, but discovering my spine was the beginning of everything else. Now I have something to go back to that isn't me being beautiful, me being ugly, and my voice attached to that. It's me being in my body and accepting its intelligence, allowing it to teach me vulnerability. Can I shake my limbs and sound like a man or a monster or a silly girl? Or can I, God forbid, sound Italian and be okay with it? Can I sound more Italian and have fun with it? Can I take on the knowledge that the way I hear my voice through bone conduction inside of me is anyways different from the way my voice is perceived outside through air conduction? So, ugly, beautiful, you know, it's not really useful. And can I have more than one voice? I'm not fixed, and I will never be, but I have found a place within myself from where I can listen, and I will do my work from there. Thank you.
And also Serena has her poetry, her latest pamphlet as well on sale on the book table. Those who are interested.
Ah, yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
You said earlier that there's like a generation of poets who are not well versed in reading their work or using their voice in that sort of maximal way. Can you recommend a couple of poets who are really good readers of their work who should be there?
Question. Holly Pester, she's a fantastic poet. She's a sound poet, but she does a bunch of different things. And I mentioned she's a sound poet because it's not a, you know, it's not accidental. She would be really, because, you know, voice is about listening and hearing. So if there isn't that ability to listen, then you can't work on your own voice. So she's great. My dear friend Iris Colom, she's great. Also, I coached her a bit, so she's even better now. She was great before. Yeah, Holly Pesta.
Yeah.
And Iris Colom. Oh, there's a bunch of. I'll send you some names. But there are. It's just. You know. Also, some people are more in their bodies naturally. Some people have more resonant voices naturally for whatever reason. Because when we babies, we all have this immense volume and ease because we can't tense yet. So I really believe that every voice can be brought back, if not to that, but to something very similar. But in general, I think in the poetry community, yeah, there is a lot. I don't know how to explain. There's this thing like we're not actors. Just don't bore me. I'm not gonna do before going on stage because that's not cool. And I, being a poet and a performer and a voice teacher and practitioner, I find myself in situations where, like, I've seen people doing poetry readings and with like the veins on the neck kind of bulging out, like being red. And I was like, I need to leave. I either leave or I take you to a room and I teach you something because, yeah.
Fascinating.
Well, thank you guys for this. Oh, yes,
sorry. Just no much. How much of your reading tonight is from real experience versus
all of it?
I think all of it. Good. Excellent.
Thank you. Actually, I have a question. It's probably quite a silly one, but what do you do as a guide?
Oh.
How is your life, basically, with the job you do? With what?
Well, yes,
yeah,
so
your
I.
Art?
I just, do you mean my routine, or do you mean
no,
in terms of work?
No, how do you spend your time? I mean, how...
Yeah, so I just finished this course, which is actually an MFA, so I have another year, but the second year is all professional, and then you write a thing at the end. So I'm done with the course. So I'm not really working at the moment as a voice coach. I have one student at the moment. It depends on the day. I also translate from Italian into English, so I do that. If it's a good day, I will do voice work, which, you know, it's just a great thing. But sometimes I don't manage to kind of be constant, with that regular.
So second question,
yes.
I can see you as an actress.
Thank you.
Are you going to that, follow that?
Well, I'm a bit old.
Getting
but
to that, like 100%.
No, I did some
really
acting. I never went to drama school. Actually, I wanted to. The theatre stage is the place I feel really drawn to.
Yeah.
And I feel like the theatre space is where all the things that I do can come together. So the writing, the voice, the singing.
If you have that presence, I have to
come
to you.
I agree.
Yeah.
The looks and the fragments
in the end. I mean, I really hope to do something, you know, on stage in the future. So follow me.